Hi, I'm Erin Sarofsky.
And I'm Austin Shaw.
This is Between the Keyframes.
Are you ready for part two of our interview with Sakani Solomon? Welcome back to Between the Keyframes.
Okay, let's do our little quickfire session.
Yes.
You could just answer quick.
Yes.
Quick, quick, quick.
Yes.
Okay, so what were you like as a kid?
Outgoing, a little mischievous. I was always outside. I used to make a lot of toys, cardboard and tape. I was always trying to do something different and creative.
Fun. Okay. Cool. Okay, this is a big question. What is more important, talent or hard work?
Hard work for sure.
Okay.
Let me get in one.
Okay, yeah. I like either.
All right. Yeah. What are your hobbies?
I like playing instruments, guitars in the back, play drums. I was playing both yesterday. And then used to like doing a lot of board sports. I used to skateboard, snowboard, and well, I still snowboard and skimboard. Don't really skateboard at all.
Okay. What is your favorite font?
Don't have one. Do like Univis though.
Okay, well, that could be your favorite font.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I know the answer to this, but if you didn't have to work, if you had, like, all the money, would you keep making stuff?
Yes.
Of course, yeah.
Or you have to.
Okay. I mean, like, you guys know each other. For me, this has been an amazing opportunity to get to know you. Okay, tell me your three most dominant personality traits.
Oof. That's a great question. I'm a Gemini, so people...
That's why you
Gemini
guys...
Gemini brother!
Yeah.
So
I could be like a extroverted introvert. Oh, no, maybe an introverted extrovert. Because like when I go out, I'm talking with everyone, life of the party. But then after that, like I need to recharge and I'm like, don't talk to me. You know, I'm like...
Yeah.
Chilling in the zone. I think...
I went to get these... I got these for myself for my birthday.
Oh, was it tight?
Gemini Vans.
Nice. Yeah, this is all month. This is all time. let me see. That, liking food, that's not a personality trait. I'm very particular about certain things. I'm not very particular about others. I think that's always, like, my fiance is always... marvels at like how particular I am with my work and how super organized I am, but then with like other life things I'm not. So
okay,
that, and I'm pretty level-headed through it. I actually, the more stressful the situation is, the more
calmer.
Yeah I work pretty well under stress. I think I like it when there's like a fire under me, because then I'm like, all right, cool, I gotta really push.
Hashtag relatable, is that what the kids say these days?
Yeah, I see.
That's probably why we get along. I'm like, I'm just nodding my head. I'm like, all those things. I'm like, yep, I get that.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Chill, man.
Well, I'm
tell us about your...
Yeah.
So. Oh, Sag. So you're just like, whatever.
No, I'm...
you're like, this stuff is nonsense. I'm going to do my own thing.
Whatever you guys say, I'm just going to have my own opinion about it.
Yeah.
No, I think actually you might have evolved me in some directions. I'm going to look into this like time off thing.
I was going to bring it back to the ego thing, because something I told Erin is that one thing I remembered about you as a student is that, you know, it was very obvious how talented you are.
Oh, and thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, but you did, like, there was no ego. Like, I was always just like, I would watch, I remember students would come up to you and be like, can you show me how to do this thing in Cinema 4D? And you'd be like, yeah, sure. And like, you know, or I'd be like, hey, can you demo this thing? Or whatever it was. Like, there was never any arrogance or like, you know, I'm the shit. Like it was always like, you were just like a very humble dude. And yeah, I'm just curious. Like, I mean, you know, we kick that around, and it, you know, because sometimes I have students who are just, you know, don't have, who have really big egos. Right. They don't have even the talent to necessarily back it up. So,
well, it gets in the way of the work too.
Yeah,
it stops you from evolving because you know.
And I think internships really helped with that. Mm-hmm. might be the hot dude in your class, but you get out there, you're just like, you start from zero. And you're not really going to advance that much. You have to understand there's always people to learn from. Always.
Yeah, always.
And you always have to keep an open mind to different ideas. And even if you're the best creative leads, ask designers their opinions. Or like, what do you think about this? Is this is this the best way to go? What do you think? Or, you have to get, feedback. And I think good leadership is also discerning, what good feedback is. You could hear something from someone and it might not be good, but at least you got a different opinion and you could be able to suss out what's good and what's not. And I've always taken that approach. The work should speak for itself. If the work is good, you shouldn't have to like,
say anything.
Right, exactly. Like, even if you don't know in that moment, if they keep tabs, eventually they'll find out. Yeah, I mean, it's fine if you have an ego, just keep it to yourself, I guess.
Yeah. Confidence and ego are two different things.
Yeah, true.
Confidence and competence they inform ego, but I think the ego we're kind of talking about comes from insecurity.
Yeah, and that really shows how people take feedback as well.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times, and this always happens, sometimes you give someone feedback, they're like, oh, why are you making me change this? Like the time they spent protesting the feedback,
they could have just
done it or tried it.
Yeah, tried.
Right. And for me, if I get feedback I disagree with, I typically would mark it up to kind of show if this is going to work or if it's not. So if I okay, this isn't going to work, I mean, mark it up to show you why it won't work. So that way there's a case versus I'm just going to say it. And sometimes I try something that I thought it wasn't going to work, and then it works. And then I'm like, oh, thank you for this feedback. So sometimes you just never know. And that's why kind of check leaving your ego at the door. You give yourself the opportunity to learn something new and different.
Yeah, I think that's I feel like you should be one of us because we also have an episode on feedback. How to just one, if you're coming into a brief driven project, that is the main ingredient of the job, is that there will be feedback. Unless it's a personal project or a passion project, or you're being commissioned to do something art-wise, you're gonna get feedback. And it's best to just go into it open and know that until you deliver, you're gonna be addressing feedback. Your creative director's feedback, your client's feedback, your client's client's feedback, your client's 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 feedback.
Yeah.
It's all coming at you.
It was interesting too. I remember in my senior year, I can't remember what class it was. It's like a media studies class, and we had to give a talk about something. And my talk was, I think, was about understanding in the professional realm, the work you do is not necessarily your work, and you have to this balance of detachment but caring. People are like, wait, what? You know what I mean? Because you think about
that hadn't occurred to them yet.
Right. And
right.
Is having that understanding, because a lot of things get killed, a lot of things get delayed. And, you have to have, again, that understanding that you're working in service of a brief or a client. And that's the job. And that's why, again, having that early on experience kind of teaches you that maturity about the work. Things happen. If you want nothing to get killed, that's why you make your own projects. But if you're a professional, you gotta roll with the punches, even if it would, if it hits.
It's interesting. I heard you talk a lot about ownership, owning your own work. And ownership is something I talk about in the realm of being a creative director, because as a creative director, I feel like my job is to make every single person involved in the job feel ownership of it. If the client feels like they impacted the outcome and that they were important in the process, they feel ownership over it. If my artists on the job feel like they problem solve, they were able to put their talent and time towards creating something amazing, they feel ownership over it. And then if everybody's happy and they feel ownership over it, I feel ownership over it because I know I helped facilitate all of that. I didn't just give somebody, I didn't just walk over to somebody's computer and say, make it blue and bigger. I say, you know, that needs a little more emphasis. Can you help figure that out?
Right.
You know, and that's a different way of being. And then when a client has a suggestion, feedback, whether it's good or bad, doesn't matter. I say, hey, that we're going to try that. And then when we try it and it does or doesn't work, but it moves the process forward, I can take that back to them and say, hey, while that idea didn't work out, like, it took us here. And I think that's really interesting. And that means they impacted the outcome and can feel ownership over it. Like, they were important in that process. And I think that that is just essential. Like,
oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So
when people, like, when people have skin in the game and they feel like they have attachment to the project, you see the work become better. It feels elevated because you care.
Right.
And that's, you know, how it's been for me at Cash. Obviously, always got to keep in mind, you know, you just have to have that fine balance. But I don't find myself having to itch to do personal projects as much, even though I'm really getting a big itch these days. But I get to really put my all into some of these projects and not necessarily have it be watered down, you know, which is refreshing and an opportunity I do not take for granted.
Yeah. In a way, I'm hearing that Cash hired you because you're you and you have like a personal point of view on the world and on art and on creativity, you know, and what you're doing. And you have a real vision there. And so I'm wondering if they see it as like, we just hired Andy Warhol, you know, to like come in and handle all their stuff and to mentor a team in that vision and all of that. And so I am wondering if you actually do own the work or if Cash still does own the work, like how, or is that like not just, was that not discussed or does it not matter because you could do what you want with it?
Oh, well, own the work in terms of what exactly?
Like actual ownership. Like, so when my studio does work, we don't own any of it.
Right.
It's all work for hire.
Yeah.
So that's what I love about this concept of ownership. There's like real ownership. Like when we hand over those files, like we own our working files.
Right.
We don't own the software.
Right.
We borrow that, right? We rent it, you know? So that gives us privileges to use it. And we don't own the renders and the outcome, but we own our files.
Right.
Usually don't own our assets unless we purchase them, but usually we're purchasing them on behalf of the client. And I think this is interesting because ownership as a concept is very practical and real, but it's also how we feel about the job.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really important. That's like gets into company culture and to what you're talking about.
Yeah, for me, the ownership, I think, comes in the value I provide. Because when I was hired,
awesome.
No one, this is the difference to a tech company. Like, no one knows what you do, right? Okay. You're coming in, you have to do like a lot of education about the process. People just don't understand how like 3D visuals are created and all of that. So when I was hired, I was pretty much like a one-man studio. I was coming up with ideas, executing things from start to finish. Like idea to final execution. But in that, there was value. Like there's an argument, not even an argument, like I'm saving hundreds of thousands of dollars in production costs because I can create stuff entirely by myself.
Yeah.
And now the idea is like, you know, how could we build something like that in-house where we could do that so we don't always have to go to like these other studios to get stuff done. And for me, that's where a lot of the ownership comes in because it's allowing me to work at things at a bigger scale, which then allows me to show that value to other people if I choose to go somewhere else.
Right.
Because that's really what you're offering as a creative is your creativity, your
point of view. Yeah.
Exactly.
This is something I get all the time, and gonna be very frank about this. I'm getting so many calls that start with, hey Aaron, we'd really like to have you speak at this thing because you're a woman.
Oh my gosh.
You're a woman. We women Women don't like to do this. Like, it's literally that blatant sometimes. No, just call me and say, hey, Aaron, I love your fucking work. Can you come and talk? Right? Like, or you're yada, yada, yada. Hey, Aaron. But they are very blatant in saying, like, hey, we need a woman. And I'm like, okay, I can get past it because I do believe that having women see a woman is, like, probably one of the most important things I could do.
Yeah.
In terms of giving to the community is, like, reflecting back to them. Because I did not have that. I had no female leaders around me at all, let alone business owners. So I think that that's really important. But then if I have to pass on it, I go, they give me the, can you give me the list of women?
Right.
As if I have the list of women, which of course I fucking do.
Right.
Right? Because I'm an advocate for, and I do give the list of women and sometimes even make the introductions. But I try to leave the lady thing out of it, though it's probably completely obvious. And I'm wondering if you have the same thing with being a person of color.
Oh, yeah. Great.
Okay.
Great question. I don't think anyone's like, the semantics are always interesting.
Yeah.
Where, you know, sometimes they would see it without seeing it in that sense. But I mean, the truth is I work in an industry that is not very diverse at all. Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, I'm like, you know, regardless of the situation, I've always feel compelled, like I have to do it because representation is needed in that space. But it also, I think one kind of benefit of being like in a visual industry is that the work usually leads and then the person behind the work comes after it.
Yeah.
So then it's like, oh, the work's good, and then who does it? And you know, the work could be getting up to the point where it's like, you know, if there was kind of any kind of any type of unconscious bias, it would kind of see past that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I've been fortunate in that sense. But yeah, when it comes to speaking engagements, regardless, I feel like I have to do it to encourage like the next generation of people.
I also think we have such a different point of view because what you were talking about, like, you know, especially being a student coming here, like, it wasn't guaranteed that you'd have employment in the U.S. So you knew you were going to have to work twice as hard and be way further than any other student to get a job.
Oh, okay.
Because it was going to require a commitment from an employer. You know, that's a privilege that none of these people talk about ever.
100%. It's like,
you know,
just to have the opportunity to get to do the work. Yeah, I've definitely been lucky with two things, opportunity, but also making the best of those opportunities because you have to, because you don't get them. And you know, a lot of people here do.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about NFTs, and I saw what you sold Hidden, your film mm-hmm. Hidden. Yeah. So like, how does that feel?
It felt good. I felt like I entered the space when I was like a little bit of a, it was kind of going down. So in the back of my mind, I'm always like, oh, maybe I could have gotten it for more. But I'm always like, yeah, well, no one had to buy this in the first place.
Right.
So
yeah,
I'm still like, yeah, this is more money than I had just having it, you know, be as a film. So that's also, you know, for someone to see the value to be able to spend, you know, like 8 Ethereum on it was
amazing.
Yeah, it's really amazing. But I don't want to make, to be honest, it's way more stressful to make content with money in mind.
Yes.
Because that, and I do not like it. I just like just making something, not thinking about it. If I want, I'll put it out. But I don't want to think, all right, I need to make something short so it sells for NFT. That's my day job.
Yeah. Yep. That sells, gosh. That makes a lot of sense. It's also something we talked about with it. Like when you do a passion project, you can't have some idea of what it's going to do for you. You just got to go into it to create the thing. And what it will do is surprise you in that either it won't perform or it will perform or it performs 10 years later when people find it. It's certainly going to add something to you as a person that is unteachable, you know, otherwise.
Awesome. You're right. Oh. That's some of that from Star Wars because I'm like, oh, this is an IP that people know. Like, my back of my mind, I was like, I really hope it gets to 1 million views. That would be cool. I mean, it's like so different. You know, you kind of hope people appreciate it, but also with like with films and that type of stuff, it is a product that still has to be marketed. It's funny, right? Because like you make an ad, but the ad still needs to be marketed.
Yeah, so media.
Right.
Like they spend way more on the media than they do making the thing.
Right. That's
for sure. People don't realize that, especially our young listeners. Yeah. If they spend $50,000 on you as the studio or artist making something, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to place it and put it all out there.
Right. Exactly.
So you're a small percentage of what is going on.
Right. And that's what you learn also at like a bigger company.
Yeah.
Like, because at studios, I was like, oh, like, why don't we just go to the client directly? Then you'll realize, oh, well, the agency is handling, you know,
the
like
media. The
like media buyers.
Oh, yeah. Right. And the account management and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So a bunch of moving pieces. But now I think a lot of big companies are taking that stuff in-house as well. So now, so a lot of, you know, studios, companies are going direct to, you know, which I think makes sense because in-house they can handle a lot of the agency-ish stuff. But I just go back to the Star Wars thing. Yeah, I did feel some pressure. But fortunately, like initially it was kind of a slow build. And then after like a couple days, I was like, you know, it is what it is, whatever it does, it does. And then, you know, it kind of blew up from there. So I was very fortunate to get that. It's never guaranteed. But yeah, I just like making stuff. So I try to keep that process pure. With NFTs, I think that kind of muddied the intention behind it.
That's interesting.
Because also, there was there's a whole mental health thing going on when the Beeple thing. When Beeple sold those first couple of things.
Oh my God. Yeah, for all of us.
Right. And I feel like no one was really talking about it at the time. And certain people started to talk about it because, you know, here you are spending, you know, this is your life. You've been doing design, motion design, and then people comes in, just becomes a millionaire, just selling stuff. You could, you know, people have been doing the whole life. I think Beeple's different because, you know, he has a context of he's the only one literally to make as much images as he had daily.
Completely.
But still, I think it's natural for people to have a sense of FOMO. It's like, wait,
this is...
And then, like, I think it was February, March. You just scroll down Twitter and everyone is selling stuff. And you just see, like, these guys came up with, oh, man, just sold like 200,000. Or I just did this, I just did that. And it's kind of grained on you. And a lot of people were feeling that. And I think then people really were like, well, how can I get in on this money? And it wasn't really much about the book. It was about, like, how can I cash in. And that, I think, made it tough, like, mentally. Like, even, you know, as much success as I had in my career, I was feeling it.
Of course. Yeah. Like,
Right. You want to get recognized. You're like, me too.
Right. But then you realize, like, none of your success in this industry translates it. You know, you kind of have to start from scratch and
Right. And it almost seems like, I don't know, this is for me, from my like 45-year-old dude's perspective of like, obviously like there's talent, but I also did see a lot of NFTs. I'm just like, really? Like, that's all for what? But anyway, it seems like, you know, if you're sort of in an influencer status, or you already have a massive following.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it seems like that is a bit, it's almost like more like a popularity than a quality maybe in some instances, not in all cases, but it did see like a lot of the people who spent a lot of years building up these
libraries,
you know, these followings and off of the libraries of their work doing really well, right? Like I think that's cool. That's like, you know, and even when they're like posting on Instagram for years and years, it's like, it wasn't like they're like, oh, one day I'm gonna get paid for all this,
right?
It just sort of happened, you know. That's that passion project.
Right place, right time.
Ethos, yeah.
Okay, so passion projects. You talked about getting the itch. You have your hidden piece and your Star Wars piece, which is both really beautiful. Are you thinking about doing a new one soon?
Yeah. I have, like, PTSD, especially from Star Wars, just because, like, I know how much of a commitment it is, especially from a time perspective. And, like,
that's like writing a book. I get the same thing. Yeah. I'm working on a new textbook, and it's like, okay, I'm going back in there.
Yeah.
But it's like really, going in the cave. Yeah. Takes a lot of time.
It is. It's like a mental thing. But really, I think when you get into the groove and you start, it's, you know, a lot better. But it's just starting and getting that time. Also, summer is just like the worst time to start a project. Because you want to be outside. So maybe in the fall, it's cool. You're inside more. I'd be like, all right, cool. Time to spend more time in the machine. Yeah, I have an idea. I have knocking the ball. But also, there's this pressure. Like, I've done these two films. That's been great. And I'm like,
you set the bar high. You got the expectation.
Right.
You did. Maybe shorter. I mean, like, with NFTs, and you've done well with NFTs, like, maybe. Because with students, I'm always saying, like, you don't have to do these long things like us professionals do. You know, like, you can do a 5-second thing or a 10-second thing and really knock our socks off. And, you know, maybe it's like a series of little short things that you're doing.
You see, but I like
the film.
Yeah, because I feel like it has, because right now I see so many like short things looks really good. And I'm like, I really want something that has like a bigger picture idea and thought throughout it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think especially in the early 2010s, there were so many cool films I used to see. There's like a point of view and an expression. Videos,
yeah.
Yeah. And because of social media, everyone's about the clips and no one's really, like, you know, even if, you know, 5 people watch it, sure, but as a personal challenge, I just love, you know, creating something that has like a little bit more staying power.
Right, a little meat to it.
Yeah.
Right.
So is your process like how it would be in a studio where you do the concept, do some writing around it, do a storyboard, build an animatic? Do you follow that process pretty closely?
Exactly. There's so much, like even with Star Wars, really getting the context of that film correct from the beginning was so important. There's so many Star Wars films. And I'm always asking like, okay, what can I do different? What can I do that someone hasn't done before? Because in this point in my career, it's not just about like making something pretty. Like I could do that. And I've been seeing it. And I'm like, well, what are people going to care about? And I always say that's my argument about Houdini. Like, it's such a time suck from a technical perspective. And I'm like, now we see so many cool sims. It's getting to the point, like, you know, it's nice, but
it's not different. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't have the impact it did, like, when Man V used to be dropping those Nike spots.
Oh, yeah.
Now, like, everyone's doing stitching, everyone's doing that. So the idea coupled with those effects, I think, was what is captivating.
And I agree.
It's a classic graphic design, classic storytelling.
Like, why are you doing it? Answering that question, but why? Like, cool, that's really cool, but why? Why did you spend your time making that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But also, you know, we see so much like really nice photoreal 3D too. I'm thinking to myself, like, okay, what can I do to stylize things? Like, what can I do to give things a little bit more personality? And that's, it's really been a challenge for me of late, like trying to figure out how to kind of refresh things and keep it different. And like, yeah. And I think we just need to start, people need to think about that more. And I always keep preaching it, like, idea, idea, idea.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'd like to thank Sakani for being our best first guest ever. And we'll see you in 2 weeks for our next episode.